Good evening, and welcome to Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz, and I'll be your host this evening. February is Cancer Prevention Month, so we'll be talking about the importance of cancer screening, and in particular, the Family Health Day that will be held at Feistweiler Cancer Center this Saturday in Shreveport. This evening in the studio, I'm joined by Dr. Paul Cater, who's Assistant Professor of Urology at LSU Health in Shreveport, and by Dr. Jerry McLarty, Director of Cancer Prevention Programs at Feistweiler Cancer Center. This evening, we'll be taking your calls, as usual, at 1-800-552-8502, but we're going to ask that you restrict your questions to those of screening for cancer and early-stage cancer and various associated screening-related questions. So to get started this evening, Dr. McLarty, can you tell our listeners about Family Health Day that's happening this weekend?
I'd be glad to. This is the third event that we've had. We're trying to do them annually now. And the idea is that we want to interact with the community and let people know we're not just a cancer treatment center, but also we're heavily involved in cancer prevention and early detection and research and education. So we've designed this as a fun day. People can bring the family out. There will be free food and a lot of events. Cancer screening is going to be the focus. We have a lot of free cancer screenings, but there will be a symposia on various topics, and then there will be lots of educational sessions and opportunities as well.
Now, where is that being held?
This is at the Feistweiler Cancer Center, which is at 1405 Kings Highway. So it's right between the Shriners Hospital and the LSU Health Science Center.
And that's occurring this Saturday?
This Saturday, starting at 9 o'clock.
Okay, and it'll be 9 o'clock through what time?
Through 1 o'clock. And there will be lunch also.
And that'll be actually inside the building, the Feistweiler building?
Right.
And where's parking?
Parking is on the south side of the cancer center. So there'll be plenty of parking. That won't be an issue.
Okay. And is there a cost associated with this screening?
No. No. Nothing will cost anybody anything for this event. The screenings are free. The food is free. And also, I might mention that there will be door prizes, which make it a lot of fun. And the biggest door prize will be a iPad.
Now, do people need to bring anything with them to be eligible for the screening? Do they need to have identification or proof of insurance or anything else that would require their eligibility?
No, they just bring themselves. We will check their eligibility for screening. You know, if they're not eligible under the current guidelines, then we can't screen them, but we'll check that. And so they do need to bring identification and health insurance information if they have it.
Okay.
And another thing, before I forget it, there will be some pharmacists on hand to help people with their medication questions. So if they have a bag full of medicines and they want to talk to somebody about them, there'll be somebody there to help them out.
Fantastic. So why is screening important?
Well, screening allows us in with some cancers to find cancers at a very early stage while they're treatable, or even in some cases preventable. If you find a colon polyp, for example, and remove it, then it doesn't go on to become a cancer. So in that case, we prevent cancer. But the idea is the earlier you find a lesion or a lump, the more likely it can be treated successfully.
I see. So is it just a cancer screening program, or are there other diseases that are being screened for it?
Primarily cancer screening, but we will also do blood pressure and blood sugar, and I think kidney disease, too, also will be screened for the same day.
Okay, very good. Dr. Cater, what are some of the diseases that will be screened?
So, you know, basically the prostate cancer would be a very important screening, a very important disease to screen, because as a urologist, I always say that screening is important, and especially want to serve the community and and make the patients and the population understand that it's a matter of having a, you know, a physical exam done with a, you know, a free prostate cancer screening with a rectal exam and a blood test called PSA. This is very important. And understanding that prostate cancer is the most common cancer among men, and we want men to be interested in their health as well. Some men, you know, in the past have avoided prostate cancer screening because they feared or they did not want an examination. And the current guidelines recommend the blood test as the first line of screening. So screening is very important starting age 50, and whenever you have a, you know, a family history of prostate cancer, the screening will start at age 45. Similarly, for, you know, an African American, this screening would start at age 45, and, you know, having also a family component, it would even start earlier, starting age 40. So the combination of a yearly prostate exam at the bedside in addition to the blood test called PSA is something very important to do, and this is what we would be emphasizing. We'll have a seminar offering those free cancer screening.
Got it. We have our first caller from Bossier. We have Leon. Leon, welcome to Health Matters. What's your question?
Thank you. Today I had my annual physical. I'm 73 years old. Blood pressure 112 over 72. And my physician said that I was boring. There was nothing wrong with me.
It's good to be boring to a physician.
Okay. I was curious about the difference between what you all are talking about, a cancer screening thing, and your basic annual physical checkup.
Yeah. So, so this is a health screening event. There are quite a number of cancer screenings going on. As Dr. McLarty mentioned, there's going to also be blood sugar or diabetes screening and blood pressure screening. But I think, you know, general health screening, when you go to your doctor for a annual physical, it's much more involved. I mean, there's blood work, you're looking for cholesterol, you know, you're listening to heart and lungs. There's a number of things. There might involve the chest x-ray, maybe a urinalysis. There's a number of things that are being looked at, not just specific disease sites. And in this particular situation, you know, certain individuals have specific risks for particular cancers depending upon their family history, their age, their genetic makeup, maybe, you know, some of their habits. And so depending upon those risk factors would determine which cancers they were screened for. Now, your physician during your annual physical would be able to identify what those things are and ideally should be screening you you know, annually anyway. So this doesn't take the place of an annual physical with one's physician or healthcare provider, but unfortunately, I think that not everyone has the same good fortune that you have, in that you have a physician who you get to see and have a screening with and get to bore with your good health and good numbers. So, I mean, this is a public service available to the community, but you know, absolutely, having a personal physician who you see on an annual basis and having a personalized screening for a number of different diseases is the gold standard. So I don't think this is meant to replace that, but is there to augment it and to increase public awareness.
I see. Okay, thank you all for the show. You do wonderful stuff. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
So we welcome your calls this evening at 1-800-552-8502. Getting back to our discussion, so Dr. Cater, you were talking about prostate cancer and the importance of screening. Dr. McLarty, what are some of the other diseases you mentioned, blood pressure, cholesterol? There are other cancers that are being screened as well. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Yes. Let me go through the list here. We'll be screening for breast cancer with mammography And Dr. Cater mentioned the screening for prostate cancer.
With the PSA.
With the PSA is what we will do at this event.
Mm-hmm.
We will do lung cancer screening using a low-dose CAT scanning screening. And all of these have certain criteria, age criteria and others that have to be met. Colon cancer screening, we will be doing one of the stool-based tests for this event. And then we will have also the head and neck surgeons there, and they will, well, they'll examine the oral cavity and neck and look for evidence of cancer or precancer. And we will also, we will not do the cervical cancer screening just because of the time based that it would take, but we will issue vouchers for somebody who qualifies and wants one to come to our Partners in Wellness screening clinic to get that later. And again, that will be free of charge. And this year we've added a new one, and that's the hepatitis C screening test also.
So there's going to be a blood test available at the screening event for
right.
hepatitis. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's the first time, and we're going to incorporate this
wow.
as part of our practice. And I might point out in reference to the gentleman's question, if we do find something abnormal, we will notify, well, we notify the patient anyway, whether it's normal or abnormal, but if we find something that needs follow-up, we'll refer it to, we'll give the results to their personal physician. If they don't have one, we'll make sure that they get an appointment in the appropriate clinic at LSU.
Very good. So who is performing these screenings? Dr. Cater, will you be there performing some of the screenings?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I would be here.
Will it be doctors, nurses? What kind of staff will be performing them?
There would be, myself, Dr. Babayan, and we would be as urologist, and there would be some volunteers from, some house staff officers who are the most welcome to come as well, and counseling would be provided, and we can, draw those PSAs and go over any questions that the public would have in regards to this, PSA screening. Very important to mention that this PSA can be high sometimes in some other benign conditions, including BPH, which is a benign growth of this prostate gland that is just underneath the bladder, and BPH comes with age, and any man above, or 50% of men approximately above age 50, would develop a benign growth of the prostate. But here we are talking about prostate cancer that has a, different mechanism. So both would make the PSA, this blood test, high, in addition to any prostate infection like prostatitis. So we want to make sure that the public and any patients would have everything cleared up in their mind, and would be doing those PSA blood tests.
Now, you mentioned the digital rectal exam as well.
This is, it was just as part as, counseling in general, with the urologists when they would be coming to the clinic. But just for this seminar, we would be providing counseling, but just the PSA blood test screening would be done.
Okay, so it's just strictly a blood test. You don't have to submit to a digital rectal exam. Okay, very good. Now, with the breast cancer screening, will there be mammograms performed on site at the event this weekend?
Yes, we have two machines. One that's in the third floor of the cancer center, and then we also have one of our mobile units. We have mobile screening units that go all over North Louisiana and out in the rural areas, and so one of our vans will be there, and it has one of the state-of-the-art tomosynthesis or a 3D mammogram as well. So both will be going on.
And what's involved with getting a mammogram for those women who've never had it done?
Well, first we check their age eligibility, and that shifts all the time according to the guidelines. But right now, if women want it, they can start screening at age 40, 45, all the way on up. Now, between 45 and 55, we recommend that they come back annually for a screening. But if they're 55 and older and don't have any risk factors such as dense breasts or family history or something, they would put them at higher risk, then they can drop down to being screened every 2 years. The actual process of getting the mammogram, they put on a gown, and all in privacy, and the technician just takes pictures of the breast. So it's like an X-ray, but it's just for the breast.
Is it particularly painful?
Well, the only pain is sometimes they have to compress the breast a little bit to get a better image. And some women complain about the pain. With one advantage of the 3D machine, the pressure is not as great. So some women seem to like that better. But in any case, it's not that difficult. Most women can tolerate it quite well.
Okay. And, you know, I've heard women say, you know, I don't want to get mammogram because I don't want them to find something. How would you address that?
That's a good question, and we do get that a lot. Even sometimes from people who should know better. The thing is that any of us can have a lesion or a lump somewhere that we don't know about, and we may not know about until it's too late, gets to an advanced stage. So, but with regular screening, like mammography, you can find these lesions when they're very small and treatable.
So if a woman, let's say they're 38 years old, they don't qualify for the screening, but they said, you know, I feel a lump in my breast, and, you know, maybe I'll come and get screened. Would they be eligible?
They certainly would for our regular clinic. On the Saturday clinic, I'm not sure they would. But, yeah, if they have a problem, at least we'll have someone there who can give them a breast exam if necessary. And if they agree there's something there, then they would go ahead and do it. You know, the recommended age of starting is at 40, but we are seeing younger and younger women develop breast cancer, so it shouldn't be ignored.
Okay. Now, I understand that Dr. Burton, who's one of the medical oncologists there, is going to be running a seminar on breast health. Is that correct?
Yeah, and he's a very good lecturer. He really is just outstanding at being able to he's a good explainer, I guess I could put it that way. So, yes, he will be talking about that, and he'll also be talking later about osteoporosis. And Dr. Cater will talk about men's health in a seminar.
You mentioned osteoporosis. Now, that's a condition that's frequently screened for and is important, certainly as people get older. Is that something that's going to be screened for at this particular health clinic, or at least it's going to be addressed?
At this clinic, the Family Health Day, it will not be addressed. But in our regular screening clinic at Partners in Wellness, we do have the ultrasound to do that, the special machine for looking at osteoporosis. And if anybody needs it, you know, we can refer them to that clinic.
Okay. And Dr. Cater, now you're going to be giving a lecture as well.
That's true. Yes, Dr. Katz.
And it's going to be regarding, in addition to prostate cancer, prostate diseases in general, are there other men's health related conditions you'll be discussing?
Yeah, I would be happy, and I would be providing this lecture to go over any details of prostate cancer, the screening, the prevention, the way of the difference between any inherited prostate cancer and what are the risk factors that we can think about, and diet that can have any impact, the screening that can be done in any man, in addition to any benign prostate disease like the BPH that I was mentioning before. And I would be open to any question coming from the public.
So why is it important that men get screened for prostate cancer? You hear a lot of conflicting information about, well, you know, we overdiagnose prostate cancer. All men will get prostate cancer if they live long enough. A lot of men will die with prostate cancer not knowing that they even have it. How do you address that criticism that perhaps it's not important to screen for prostate cancer?
So this criticism is basically linked to the fact that longevity has increased. So we are able to live longer now, and we have, by doing earlier detection, we know that prostate cancer is a very slow growing cancer. It takes sometimes 10, 12 years to have something, to have the disease taking more effect and growing outside the prostate itself. But in some forms of very aggressive prostate cancer, you know, it can grow very fast. So when we do the diagnosis and we pick up the disease by doing later on any biopsy that would be needed, we can stage the prostate cancer based on, you know, tissue and pathology and some findings orienting us towards either we need to treat right away, and if the patient would need any surgery or any radiation therapy or sometimes any hormonal slash chemotherapy. So it is, you have a very wide range of prostate cancer now that are detected based on, you know, those pathological findings. But usually prostate cancer is a slow cancer. This is why the screening, I wouldn't say would stop as of age 70 or 75, but the guidelines would tell you that after age 70 to 75, it is not indicated if you want to keep being aggressive to doing those PSAs and this the rectal exam, because if you add 10 to 15 years on top of 70, so you will be 85 and 90, and you know, you will not have the prostate cancer having any influence on your longevity after that.
So what you're saying is, for some of these men, they could get diagnosed with prostate cancer and not necessarily need to have treatment?
That is true, exactly. So you might have, you know, patients who are accepting to have, you know, what we call watchful waiting. That means an active way of keeping an eye on the prostate cancer. When the scoring system of this prostate cancer based on pathological findings is a low-grade prostate, and we keep an eye on the PSA velocity and the fact that this PSA, the blood test that we're going to be making, you know, taking on Saturday, is plateauing and not probably growing exponentially. So when we do this follow-up with patients every 3 months, then every 6 months, and we find out that, hey, the pathological staging is a low grade and the PSA is not elevated and going up, we can offer this watchful waiting or active surveillance in some in a minority of patients. Yeah, surgery is not always the rule.
Got you. So we've discussed prostate cancer, which is the most common cancer in men. We've discussed breast cancer, which is the most common cancer in women. And we're not talking about skin cancer necessarily, although skin cancer screening would also be a good one as well. But the most lethal cancer occurring in both men and women is lung cancer. Now, there's going to be lung cancer screening. You mentioned something about CT scans. Is that right,
right,
McLarty? So will there be lung cancer screening with CT scans like there will be the mammograms this weekend?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. It's been proven with the recent research that we can screen for lung cancer. Originally, years ago, when I was going to school, all the results said it wasn't worth it, that you couldn't find it early enough. But now, in high-risk groups, so we focus only on people who are 55 and over, who are now smoking, or if they quit, they've quit very recently. And so they're a higher-risk group, and we have a more likelihood of finding something in them if they have it. The CT scan, it's just also called a CAT scan. It's just a way of taking multiple X-ray images in slices and then putting them back together with a computer in three-dimensional. The low dose is a advantage because you're not exposing them to unnecessary radiation.
So that's something, you know, sorry to interrupt, Dr. Katz, very important to hear about this low-dose CT scan that we actually, as urologists as well, I mean, in my practice, I think I am leaning towards this protocol, even in my follow-ups for some patients who are having some kidney stones and we can offer this low-dose CT scan, because too much radiation would cause, on the contrary, as we are mentioning here, more cancers and added leukemias and lymphomas and skin burns and skin cancer. So recently, what we are saying here, the FDA has released a white paper recently in 2010 encouraging all physicians to minimize the use of radiation and as minimum as needed.
Which is a tenet of radiation oncology, I will say, mm-hmm. as well. So these low-dose CT scans, as you stated, give less radiation, so they're good for screening. They don't require any IV contrast, so there's no needles required, right. And they're relatively fast. And as you stated, Dr. McLarty, they can actually pick up lesions much smaller and much earlier than ever before. And that's really the key, is catching these things early before they cause symptoms. So you mentioned the age over 55. You mentioned smoking. Now, in order to be considered high-risk smoker, how much smoking are we talking about?
They have to be a long-time smoker, 30 pack years.
So what does a pack year mean?
Pack years, if you multiply how many packs a day they smoke by how many years they've smoked, that's a pack year. So the minimum is 30 pack years to be considered at the highest risk like these people. And then if they've just quit recently, so they're still feeling the effects of their smoking.
Okay, so if they, let's say they quit 10 years ago and they used to be a heavy smoker, do they still qualify?
Yes. Now, if it's over 15 years, they don't qualify.
Okay.
Because there is some recovery, some healing that occurs over time, and 15 years is considered the cutoff.
Okay. Now, what if they were in the hospital 6 months ago for pneumonia? They had a CAT scan at that time, and they had some abnormalities, but they since have, gone home. They feel better, and now it's 6 months later, and they want to come get screened for lung cancer. Would they be eligible?
There's no exclusion for that. I guess their personal physician would have to help them make that decision.
Okay.
But the fact that it's low dose, I think, minimizes the risk.
Okay. How about lung cancer? Colon cancer.
Well, we screen for colon cancer as well. Now, at this event, we will be doing one of the stool tests. There's two high-sensitivity stool tests. One is called the FOBT, the fecal occult blood test, and that's the one we'll be using for this event. And there's another one called the FIT, which is a immunological type test, and both of them actually they require getting a sample of the stool at a bowel movement, and then they're tested to see if there's blood positive there.
So do you want people to bring stool in to the health day and you'll test the stool?
We could do that, but we're not. What we do is we give them a kit to take home. And then they will do the test themselves, and we give them explicit directions. That we have them in Spanish and English, and they're specially tailored for low literacy understanding. And then they take it home and mail it back to us. We do the test, and if there's something wrong, then we...
So how does someone take stool from home and get it on this card, and then how do they... what's the process?
Well, and that's the big drawback. I think people don't like to do it. Essentially, one way is you put newspaper over the toilet, and then you do your business, and then you take the kit comes with a little stick, and you take a small sample and put it on a special card, and then you close that up and mail it in. Now the FIT test is a little easier. It comes with a long brush, and you don't have to collect it on paper or something. You just have your bowel movement and this brush. You reach down in the stool and get a sample and then send that brush in for testing.
Now, is this replacing the colonoscopy that's recommended people get?
No, absolutely not. It's a good adjunct because, frankly, there's not enough doctors to do all the colonoscopies we need, especially in a state like Louisiana that is so far behind on the screening. So this is a good stopgap, I think. And you have to do it, these fecal tests, every year. Now, the colonoscopy, you only have to get one of them every 10 years. So what we do, if anybody has a positive FIT or FOBT test, then we get them scheduled for a colonoscopy, because that's the gold standard.
I see. Okay. I want to remind our listeners that if you have any questions, or for that matter, if you've had any of these screening procedures, let's say it was the fecal occult blood test or the screening low-dose screening CT scan for lung cancer, or if you want to share a particularly meaningful mammogram experience, perhaps a favorable experience where screening perhaps had a positive impact on your life, feel free to call in at 1-800-552-8502. So why is it, Dr. McLarty, you think that there aren't enough doctors performing these colonoscopies?
Well, there's just a lot of people needing them, and I don't think there's enough GI docs to do that. We need to train more, in this state anyway.
Do family doctors offer this?
Some do. There are some family doctors that are trained to do it. So it's either a specially trained family doctor or a GI doc that does a procedure.
Okay. Now, you mentioned occult blood, meaning that blood that you can't see in the stool, that you're putting some of it onto this card, you're sending this card in through the mail, and then I guess some chemical test is being performed on the card to see if there's hidden blood in it. So blood in stool, I guess, is abnormal. What if someone actually sees blood in their stool? If they go to the bathroom, they wipe, they see blood, or it's in the toilet. Should this be something that, you know, should raise suspicion? Should they go and get a card to confirm that it's blood, or is there something more that they should do at this point? Dr. Kato, what do you think about that?
I think they should seek a good full consultation, and for my part as a urologist, blood will come in the urine. So for the prostate cancer screening, I mean, any patients who would have either blood in the urine or having pushing to void would be a sign or a symptoms that would, lead the patient to come to the clinic and seek a urologic consultation.
Yeah. So I think as a general at-home screening test, I think it's a good rule of thumb that blood... seeing blood is usually not a good sign. So if you see blood when you brush your teeth, you probably should see your dentist, because you may have periodontal disease. If you have blood when you have a stool, you should see your doctor. It could be something as mild as hemorrhoids, or it could be something more serious. If there's blood in the urine, certainly,
true,
that's something you should follow up. But coughing up blood is not a good thing. Bloody nipple discharge from anywhere is not a good thing.
Absolutely.
So any blood that's not limited to your vasculature should be a sign that you should go seek some medical attention. That's okay. True. And moving right along, we mentioned bleeding gums. Now, Dr. McLarty, you said there was going to be some head and neck cancer screening as well. What are some of the cancers specifically that they're looking for?
Well, they mostly look for oral cancers or pharyngeal cancers, the palate at the back of the throat, or even... laryngeal cancer, the voice box. That's what they see a lot of at our institution. But they're looking for often just a lump that shouldn't be there, or a swollen gland that shouldn't be there, or even sores that look like they're not healing.
I see. And is there a particular group of people who would be at greater risk for developing these types of head and neck cancers?
Yeah, that's a good question. Smokers... certainly are at higher risk, and people who are also heavy drinkers are at higher risk. And if they do both, then that puts them right up there. And we're now also seeing people who are HPV positive who are at higher risk of oral cancers.
Yeah, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. HPV, you hear a lot about this in the news. What exactly is HPV?
That's human papillomavirus. It's just a virus. The most common benign form causes warts, for example. And there are about 120 different subtypes of HPV. And out of those, there's just a small subset that actually can cause cancer. So, and they first started out just doing this in women with their pap smears. If they had an abnormal looking lesion, they would also swab it and they would test for HPV. And they found, like in cervical cancer, that virtually 100% of the cervical cancers are HPV positive for one of these subtypes.
Now I understand that a large percentage of head and neck cancers, particularly those of the mouth, are being caused by HPV, even perhaps even more than smoking. That's really changed a lot.
Yeah.
So this HPV vaccine seems to be particularly important now more than ever, not just for prevention of cervical cancer, but perhaps for prevention of head and neck cancer.
Yes, and we need to stress that people need to get vaccinated, or their children should get vaccinated starting at age 11 or 12, as young as that, and both girls and boys.
Yeah. Dr. Cater, do you encounter any HPV-related diseases?
We do. We do have patients presenting to the clinic and requiring, you know, sometimes men requiring HPV small lesions that can be either treated, you know, in the clinic because they are too small and we can burn them or give some medication, or they are extensive involving the area and they would need a wider excision in the operating room. So
are these genital warts? Is that what you're talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. Yeah. Condylomas. Yeah.
Got it. So genital warts. So we're talking about genital warts in men, actually genital warts in women as well. We're talking about cervical cancer. We're talking about head and neck cancer. That the HPV is a bad actor. Okay. So, and then you mentioned lumps in the neck, Dr. McCarty, I think you mentioned.
Right.
Often first sign of head and neck cancer. Okay, so they're going to be, so the ear, nose, and throat doctors are going to be doing that.
Yes.
Now, as far as the cervical cancer, so they're not going to be doing pap smears because of time constraints.
Right.
So, now what exactly is a pap smear?
Well, pap smear, they're examined by a health professional. It can be nurse practitioners or physicians. And they actually examine the cervix and any abnormal looking areas. They can take small samples, scrapings or with a swab and get cells from those areas, and then those cells are sent to a lab and a pathologist can look at them and say these are cancerous, or there may be early signs of pre-malignancy, or are they normal? And then now we also do the HPV. It's called co-testing, where they get the pap smear and the HPV test simultaneously.
Okay, so why is it important to know whether you have the HPV positivity on your pap smear or some abnormal cells? Why is that important?
Well, it means you need to be maybe examine further, or at the very least start being watched at a much higher frequency, because it's such a risk factor that you want to monitor it. Now, some people get HPV infections that go away, you know, by themselves, but if someone continually has the high risk HPVs, then they definitely need to do something about it.
And are there any risk factors for cervical cancer?
Well, smoking is one, strangely enough, but at age and being just sexually active, I think.
Does number of sexual partners have an impact?
Right. Yeah. The risk goes up, and I, That's probably through the mechanism of the HPV. The riskier the sex and a number of partners increases your risk for having the HPV virus.
I see. Now, smoking, smoking seems to be something we mentioned each of these: cervical cancer, lung cancer, head and neck cancer, colon cancer. Now, maybe not so much prostate cancer, but bladder cancer, another big cancer caused by smoking. Now, is there a way to screen for that, Dr. Cater?
We do not, usually offer a screening that is indicated by the guidelines for patients to detect bladder cancer. You know, it's not like prostate cancer having this marker. However, when patients come with symptoms and blood in the urine, there is a full workup, and we have urine tests that we do called cytology and other, advanced urine tests, more specific to do this. And basically we come in with a scope inside the bladder, and we can detect any polyp or any tumor that can that may be identified. And by doing some biopsy, we can take out the lesion and study the lesion and come with a conclusion. However, a straightforward screening that is indicated, let's have for every man or woman as of age 40 or 50, like the colon, the answer is no.
No, but still a change in urinary function or development of symptoms, as you mentioned, the particularly bleeding, should alert you that, hey, maybe I need to be checked out.
Absolutely. Any bleeding that you can see with your eyes, that is called hematuria, that means it's seen. But sometimes the problem is this bleeding cannot be seen. It's microscopic, so it can be incidentally found. I mean, you can find it with any patient having some other, medical or surgical consultation. And by doing this urine test, which is a general urine analysis, you can check for tiny red blood cells, leading you to detecting the bladder cancer or even the kidney cancer, because you have to test everything from up to down. That means from the kidney to the bladder, the entire genitourinary system.
So why are we able to detect certain cancers but not others?
So, Dr. McLarty, this is a question to both of us, but I think that, for prostate cancer, we are able to detect. Sometimes it's frustrating for urologists, in very rare conditions. We have a PSA that is high, and we have a physical exam that is within normal limits, and we tend to do some biopsies, and then the patient do not present with any cancer, but we have to keep an eye on them.
Okay, now how about testicular cancer? Is there a test for that?
Same thing. I would encourage, any man to do a self-palpation, but there is no regular screening test for testes, so for testicular cancer, but auto self-exam like breast cancer, when it's indicated, it's encouraged to have any man, if feeling any lump or any nodule, to consult right away a urologist, and those diseases would come in young population.
So there were not going to be free testicular exams offered at Health Day. You do that at home.
Absolutely.
Okay, right. And the same is true. And no breast exams either this weekend, just mammograms.
Right.
Okay. But there will be discussion of those things. And if women want to know how to do breast self-exams at home, Dr. Burton would be available to discuss that. And you could talk about testicular exams, self-exams as
sure
well.
Sure thing.
Your thing.
Sure
okay,
thing.
Very good. And now, are there any other things going to be, let's say, for children? Is there, for people who have kids and want to bring their kids with them, are there going to be any family activities available?
There'll be some things for the children, coloring books and things like that. And I'm not sure, but I know in the past we gave out Mardi Gras beads, just some things to keep the children occupied. But that shouldn't stop people from coming if they have their children, and they can't get a babysitter. They need to come in and do the screening anyway. And one reason why we have this on a Saturday is so people who ordinarily can't get away can come in for the screening.
Okay. And let's move away from cancer for a moment and talk about blood pressure screening. You know, high blood pressure is called the silent killer. What are the new guidelines as far as blood pressure? What constitutes high blood pressure or something that someone should be alarmed at? Do you know?
I'm not the best person to ask on that.
I don't know the answer either. It seems to me that the number keeps going down and down and down. And so the importance of screening, I think, is underemphasized. And it's very important because people don't know that they have high blood pressure. And you can end up with all sorts of conditions from, you know, and we think about heart attacks and stroke, but you can end up with, you know, kidney disease and a number of other conditions. So, yeah, so blood pressure screening is actually very important. And it's very easy to do. What about blood glucose? Why is that important to check?
Well, because people with high glucose may have diabetes, and that can lead to all other kinds of problems, cardiovascular and otherwise. So it's just a good, simple test for diabetic type diseases. Now, back to the blood pressure question, one of the things we see out in the rural communities on our mobile units is a lot of people have high blood pressures. I mean, dangerously high blood pressures, and they didn't know it. And they still say, well, I don't feel it. I feel okay, so why should I worry about it? So that's one of our big challenges, I think, is to educate people like that to know the risk factors and the importance of them and importance of getting something done.
Yeah.
And changing some lifestyle. I mean, having some lifestyle modification based on, you know, you don't want to add salt on any meal that you eat even before tasting the meal. Some, you know, people like to do this. And weight gain and weight loss is something that would be encouraged. So physical activity in addition to lifestyle modification.
Yeah. My producer just texted me. She said that normal is 120 over 80, which I think, you know, we all hear those numbers. But then there's definitions. I think, you know, what's pre-hypertensive or stage one hypertension, and I think those numbers keep going down. So, you know, at 130 systolic, I think, is considered high blood pressure. But I think even less than that can be something that needs to be observed. It's not, you know, I think the number, like I said, I think those numbers have come down. And cholesterol screening is also important as well. That's not going to be included this weekend, though.
We're not doing that.
Now, in the time we have left, I understand there's some other topics are going to be discussed as well that are also important, like discussions regarding sickle cell anemia and bone marrow and the bone marrow transplant program and as well as genomics and smoking cessation. Can you talk a little bit about that, Dr. McLarty?
Yes, in addition to the regular seminars like Dr. Cater be giving, we have a large room, our big meeting room, and it's like a typical health fair. There's different booths, and there'll be people from different health organizations and from different departments in the hospital talking about all of these things. So we have people talking about healthy eating just a number of things like smoking cessation. The American Cancer Society will be there talking about some of their survivorship type programs. So it'll be a host of activities. I think nobody will get bored.
Okay. Well, we actually have another caller on the line. We have Randall from Cross Lake. Randall, welcome to Health Matters. What's your question for our panel?
Hi, thank you so much. I'm a little bit late joining in to the conversation, but I just wanted to check to see if vaccinations, particularly the recommended vaccinations in adults, was going to be part of their program. And if you could speak to, you know, the current issues with vaccinations out in the west part of the country not being utilized as often as the health authorities recommend. And one argument that I've heard recently amongst a family member was that, you know, if you're healthy, you don't necessarily need a flu vaccine, because if you get the flu, your immunity is going to be stronger if you get it naturally, as opposed to not getting it and just getting the flu vaccine. So thank you for your program. You're doing a wonderful job as a host. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for your call and for your kind words. So any thoughts about that, gentlemen?
Well, I think it's an endemic problem, and even just common things that children should be vaccinated for, measles, for example. I know people, unfortunately some of them in my extended family, who just don't believe in doing it because they've heard this rumor of the link with Alzheimer's, what's the disease I'm thinking of?
Autism?
Autism, yeah.
Although when you make an argument for Alzheimer's if you can't remember.
Yeah. Well, maybe I hope there's a vaccine for that someday. But you know, people don't realize that those studies that came up with the autism measles vaccine link were totally fabricated and have been debunked over and over and over at the cost of millions of dollars that the government spent fighting them down, but still people hear those rumors and they believe it.
Yeah. Dr. Cater, any thoughts about, I know it's not exactly a topic of the evening, but since we're talking about health and health promotion and public health, and we were talking about the HPV vaccine, so I said, I guess it's fine to at least, you know, mention it. Any particular thoughts about the flu vaccine?
I think it is, you know, highly recommended in any medical, employee, as a physician, nursing staff, any person who would be working in the hospital and have physical encounter with any sick patients. So inside the hospital, it is kids, perhaps. So this is something that can be discussed at home. Some family would not like to have this given. So it is also a cultural thing that you think that, you know, flu vaccine is never going to be effective. But I do believe that giving it and staying safe is something that I would highly recommend. We have the guidelines, and as a physician, I never missed taking my flu vaccine.
Yeah, I know that there was, in the earlier part of the 20th century, thousands and thousands of people died from the flu. I mean, it was an epidemic. We kind of forget about that. We forget about all the kids who and people who died of measles, about polio. And I mean, you know, it's just, I guess we've gotten so good at preventing these diseases that people don't have any knowledge about them or memory of them. I remember growing up and some friend's mother had polio, and I guess maybe it will require, another scourge to get people to fully appreciate the advancement that vaccines have really truly been, and how much it's helped public health. But it's just so much you can do, you know. But I will tell you, having had the flu personally, it is horrible, and I know even now. I know a number of people who are getting the flu, who've gotten their flu shots, and you could say, well, people are getting the flu, but I will tell you, it is much more mild if you get a flu shot and you get the flu. You know, you can be back to work in a day or two, but if you've ever had the flu, I mean, you're miserable. It is something you definitely want to avoid. So, obviously not essential, but certainly recommended, and I can't think of a good argument not to get it, it's a personal decision. Speaking personally regarding the other vaccines, like the measles vaccine, you know, I think that as a medical professional, I think that I have to strongly recommend getting the measles vaccine. It's an interesting thing about the measles vaccine that people don't know is that it not only prevents you from getting the measles, but it also helps to prevent you from getting a number of other infectious diseases. They've looked at this, so it's very interesting. The way that the measles works is it actually it weakens your cellular immunity. In other words, what happens is, and I know we're a little off topic, but I think it's important, is that when you get the measles, one of the ways that the measles virus evades your immune system is by kind of erasing some of your cellular immunity. So that means that your body remembers having gotten infected with things in the past, and you have permanent immunity to those things. But the measles actually erases some of that. So what they found in people who got the measles vaccine is that they actually, moving forward, got less infectious diseases unrelated to the measles itself, because it kept your immune system whole. So anyway, strong advocate for the measles vaccine. Anyway, getting back to our topic, for those listeners who tuned in late, we're talking about the LSU Health screening that's occurring this weekend, this Saturday, February the 9th, which is at the Feisweiler Cancer Center on 1405 Kings Highway from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. There's going to be free screenings with mammograms, PSA for prostate cancer, lung cancer with low-dose screening spiral CT scans. There'll be head and neck cancer screenings. There'll be discussion about colon cancer screening with kits for you to take home and screen at home. There'll be discussion and vouchers for cervical cancer screening. There'll be blood pressure checks. There'll be blood sugar checks. There'll be free breakfast and lunch and health information and seminars. There'll be food demonstrations and smoothies with samples and lots of other information as well. And Dr. Cater, Dr. McLarty, anything else you'd like for our listeners to know?
One thing we didn't hit on too strongly, and that's smoking. You know, smoking is still the number one preventable cause of death. And it doesn't matter how long you smoke. If you quit, you will improve your life expectancy, and people need to know that.
And will there be some discussion about ways and strategies to stop smoking?
Yes, there are some people in those sessions who will discuss that.
And, you know, for the public, as a urologist, I'd like to reemphasize the fact that, you know, prostate cancer is the most common cancer in men in America, and our estimation in 2019 is that we're going to have around 170,000 new cases, newly diagnosed prostate cancer, and probably 31,000 deaths from prostate cancer. So roughly about one man in nine will be diagnosed with prostate cancer during his lifetime. So screening is very important. Prevention is very important as well. And we have risk factors that are inherited, and genetics, and lifestyle modification.
Very good. Well, with that, I'm going to have to close. Once again, I thank my guests, Dr. Cater and Dr. McLarty. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The views and opinions expressed in Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with phone assistance provided this evening by Wally Derliff, Sheila Lawrence, Tim Snell, and Al Villarreal. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you for joining us this evening.